Welcome to the Manager Tools Podcast for Monday, September 4th, 2006. Hi, this is Michael Lozen, and welcome back to Manager Tools. Good business practices demand good relationships with customers, suppliers, team members, and bosses. And good relationships usually means breaking bread together. So are you up to speed on how to have a business meal? Or even worse, host the meal yourself? You are? Well, good. Then you already know when to start talking business and whether it's different at breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You know how much alcohol to drink and how many glasses of wine there are in a bottle. And the ideal way to pay for a meal or what to do when the check comes. If you know all that, then we bet you also know where to seat your guest and yourself, whether there are two or three of you. And of course, what to order and what not to order. Soup, you say? Sorry. And if you're not sure, that's why there's a Manager Tools podcast covering all that and more. Stay tuned. I find today's topic incredibly interesting. You know, who would have ever thought of two West Pointers talking about etiquette advice? I can remember eating in about 5 minutes and, you know, putting your arms around the plate and growling at anybody who came even remotely close to the food.
Of course they taught us etiquette, but we didn't listen very well. I thought my mom would kill my brother and I when we came back from school. She thought that West Point was going to turn us into young gentlemen, and all we had learned how to do at the table was inhale our food. And actually, thanks to school, I now see eating as a chore that's all about fuel. And eating is not one of my favorite things by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I wish I had that problem. I'd probably be a little more fit.
But okay, no comment.
Okay, so why the heck are we talking about this?
Well, you know, the fact is, you and I have both seen too many cases of just plain atrocious etiquette. And we're not talking here about Emily Post etiquette. We're talking about business etiquette, business meals. You know, you and I have seen cases where people drink inappropriately, where checks aren't picked up the way they're supposed to be. People order finger foods and then get it all over themselves and make a big commotion trying to clean their clothes. And you know, it seems to me that we can either bemoan the decline of civilization, or you and I can stand politely in the breach and offer some suggestions to our friends and members about how to get through a business meal following reasonable business etiquette.
Yeah, when you first suggested this, I was kind of like, I don't know, but you know, after thinking about it and thinking about some examples back in my history, it's like this is really a great topic for our listeners. You know, if you're a manager or if you want to be one, you know, these are kind of pretty basic recommendations, but they're going to make you stand out, you know, from those who don't know how to do it or just don't do it. You know, if you're an executive, we're going to talk about things that won't make you look like a lowly man, you know, the lowly manager who has never been to a nice, you know, business dinner or meeting with the client, meeting with the client. So, you know, and more and more, you know, relationships is rules our business lives, and you know, breaking bread, meals are part of, you know, building relationships. So, I think this is a great topic. I have to ask you though. I mean, do you really have the answer to how many drinks is the right amount? Everybody wants to know that.
Actually, I don't have the answer. And in fact, I think generally because of culture, there is not only one right answer to how much you can drink at a business dinner. But I do have an answer that is never wrong. And sometimes I think that's a mistake that people make when we get into the quasi-business area, or we get into the gray areas of the business world, Mike, is that people are looking for the right answer. Because so often as managers, we're looking for errors. And so they're looking for the approved solution, if you will. And the fact is, sometimes there's not an approved solution, but we can eliminate the chance of making a mistake. And that, if you can eliminate a mistake, then you can focus on the other areas where you really can make a difference.
Yeah, I don't naturally gravitate to to that, but I think there's a lot of wisdom sometimes in simply avoiding being wrong. As bad as that sounds, sometimes that's good enough.
Yeah. Well, it's a bit like military tactics in the sense that you can't be on offensive everywhere. There are a couple, you know, in some ways you're just defensive. You say, well, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that because I don't know how to do that. But in these other areas where there's a possibility that I can really make a difference and I can avoid being wrong, I'm going to go ahead and take some risks or push the ball forward, so to speak.
Yeah.
And also, one of the things that I find most interesting, and I got lucky, I admit this, early in my business career when I was at Procter & Gamble, I had a couple of mentors who really helped me in this as I was meeting more senior people, and they told me the rule about when you talk about business at a meal. And luckily, when I was 27 years old, I learned that it's different at different meals.
Yep.
That I was really quite surprised by that because that's not the way I was raised. So we'll talk about that as well in this cast.
Cool. Okay, well, let's get going on that. How are we going to go about this?
Okay, six topics. Seating, believe it or not, seating makes a difference. It's funny, but people don't think about seating, but those people who are attuned to it, since it's how you start a meal often when you're eating out, you can almost doom yourself from the very beginning. Seating, and then we're going to talk about eating, what to eat, what not to eat. We'll talk about drinking, which will briefly include alcohol, and also a comment about iced tea as well. Hosting, and separate from that, paying, in other words, settling the bill, which brings out interesting behavior often. And then lastly, we'll talk about when one should talk about work, because there are appropriate rules depending upon which meal you're having.
Okay, so let's get into seating. I assume we're not talking about, you know, seating rules if you're having dinner with someone from the Secret Service who happens to be also guarding the Homeland Security chief or something.
Who has to sit with their back to the wall, exactly. No, we're not talking about that. And also, let's be clear, we're not talking about, in general in this cast, Mike, we're not talking about you and three of your coworkers going out to a local diner for lunch for burgers or fish and chips. You know, we'll talk about that briefly when we talk about who pays and how to pay. We're really talking about a slightly more formal meal where people begin to feel a little bit of tension around, okay, are there rules and should I be careful and so on. But it may be dinner, most likely it'll be dinner, but it could also apply to breakfast or lunch when we're talking about having lunch with a client or an executive where there is an intent to discuss work and there's an invitation, if you will, associated with it. And the first rule when it comes to seating is what we call guest best. And it's very simple. The guest always gets the best seat. Simple, right?
What do you mean best seat? I mean, is there really a best seat at the table? I mean, aren't they all pretty much the same?
Yes, in fact, there is. And people in society know what it is. The best seat is either one that A, has the best view, if that is noted or offered in some way as associated with a restaurant. Usually we're talking about a skyline or water or an ocean or something along those lines. Or B, where one faces the room versus having their back to the room. And that generally is the primary driver of this, unless there is a view. Or C, they are not going to be bothered by foot traffic around their chair. And oftentimes what I see happen, Mike, is that a host or somebody who's hosting somebody or the leader, if you will, gets to the table first. And if they're in a booth or whatever, they scoot their way in and they end up sit facing the room and their guest perhaps ends up with their back to the room. And so if you're in doubt about any of these rules, make sure that your back is to the rest of the room so that your guest will be able to face the room. And here's something funny. There's a hidden benefit to this, which wasn't really intended with the original etiquette rules, but it ends up happening nonetheless. If you're the junior person or if you're trying to pay special attention to a guest or you're hosting, seating yourself with your back to the room will keep your eyes and your attention on the other people at your table. And if you doubt that that's a good thing, note how often the people whose backs are not to the room, end up having their eyes drawn away from you by people behind you walking by, other people at other tables, and so on. And trust me, if you were the one facing the room, your eyes would be drawn away from your guest. So having your back to the room, even though for some people it may be less comfortable, that's the appropriate place for you to sit if you're hosting. The guest gets the better seat.
Yeah, and I find it very annoying when I'm talking to someone when their eyes are wandering all over the place. It's annoying
to
me.
So if you're the junior person, if you're the manager hosting an executive, or even if the executive is paying, but you are being deferential to them, in other words, you're thinking of them more in a guest role, you don't want to be facing the room and looking over their shoulder every 5 seconds as somebody walks by, or as a waitress walks by, or a waiter walks by, and so on. It is annoying. Now look, there's even more to this, and this is again where people, there's a serious faux pas, or not a faux pas, but there's a mistake that people make. If you're dining with one guest, and typically we're talking about a table that would have room for four at it, a square table, do not sit across the table from your guest. Sit next to them. A lot of times tables are just too large. You don't want to raise your voice. And you don't want to have to lean across the table and put your tie or your blouse in your soup or your salad. Although I hope you don't have soup.
We'll talk about that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, yes, we will. You know, if you're in a lively restaurant, which may be a great place to eat, and having to lean forward to always essentially raise your voice, is not conducive to a pleasant business meal, particularly if you're actually going to talk about work. And some people would say, well, gee, I don't want, you know, somebody to think I'm trying to be intimate with them. It's not perceived as intimate at all. It's simply professional. You don't want to have your guest have to yell. And you don't want to have to lean across the table.
Yeah. Well, what now, if you have two guests?
Yeah, okay, good one. If you have two guests, do not seat them across from one another with you in between. I did this once.
Isn't that good, though, in terms of, you know, being the center of attention? Isn't that what you want?
Yeah, great, yes. No, it'll be as if you're watching a tennis match, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And the thing that really happened to me was I was focusing on one guest, my boss, and was not catching clues from the other guest, because in order to pay attention to one person who's talking, you have to essentially turn away from the other one. You want to sit, you want to put them next to one another, and then you sit across from one or the other. It doesn't matter which one you sit across from. But if you and an associate are hosting someone, again, don't put them between you and the two of you.
Oh, very come bad. On. You're taking all the fun away.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not. We're not tag teaming a vendor or a client or a supplier. We're having a meal together. We're getting to know one another. Yes, we're going to talk about business, but this is not a stress interview.
Okay.
A couple other things that sometimes people they make simple mistakes on even before the meal is started. Don't seat yourself until your host arrives. It's far, far better to wait and meet at, you know, in the waiting area, if you will, before heading to your table. Now, look, we're not trying to suggest that if you're meeting your friends for lunch somewhere, or if you're at a place where reservations aren't taken, you need to grab a table for your group. That's fine. Now, if you are waiting for an executive who's a guest of yours, or someone who is hosting you, and you're at a place where there are no reservations, and you don't want to sit yet, I hope nobody's offended by this. If you give the hostess or maitre d' a $10 or $20 bill and explain your situation and imply that the person you're meeting is important and you want to wait for them, you don't want them to wander around looking for you while you're sitting at table waiting for them or constantly craning your neck, you know, a $10 or $20 bill in most situations, not all, but in most situations, will allow a table to magically appear that's available for you when your guest arrives. Yes, it increases the cost of the meal. But if, in fact, you're worried about this, paying a $10 or $20 to make that problem go away is a very good investment. And we'll talk further about making reservations a little bit, and, you know, knowing the maitre d' and knowing the host, if you will. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with tipping the host. You don't wave a $20 bill in their face, but you can be very discreet about it. And we could spend an hour talking about discretion. We won't, because we've got a plenty long podcast here as it is. But
good.
But those are just some basic rules about seating, about where to sit, where the guest sits, and so on. We just don't want someone – we don't want an executive to have to tell someone, well, by the way, you gave me the wrong seat. And it can get even more fancy than that, but I think that will keep people out of 90% of the faux pas that might happen.
Okay. The next one we're talking about is eating. So I suppose here we're going to spend, 20, 25 minutes in terms of which fork to use and which spoon to use and that kind of stuff. How to hold your glass, how to hold tea, because, and put your little pinky out
here. Of course
we
are, sir, because we're actually experts on those kind of things. Now, we'll just talk about a few of the frequent questions that I get, particularly when I'm coaching people about interviewing. And let me make a note here about interviewing. Everything we're talking about here applies in interviewing, except for if you're being interviewed, you would never have to offer to pay. That's just a given. You're the guest. Please don't necessarily take the guest's seat. In fact, I would argue that if you get to the table before the host, if you're in an interview, keep your back to a busy restaurant. If you're going to be interviewed, far better for you to be able to focus again. And they might say, nope, please sit there, and you could say, well, I prefer to sit here. That's a very subtle thing, but it's well worth it to avoid, again, the distractions that happen when you have when you're facing the room rather than your back to the room. But we're just going to talk about a few basic things, and I'm sure people are going to want to ask us questions, and we'll be happy to field them on the discussion forums. The first one, and it's one that people miss an awful lot, Mike, is order simple food.
Yeah, I tell you, that's a great one because, you know, simple food that's easy to eat. The best one I've ever seen that's just perfect for interview situations is barbecued ribs. It's amazing.
Oh, it's classic.
I interviewed a senior manager one time and over lunch, and he ordered barbecued ribs. It was hilarious.
I've interviewed so many people over meals that I don't even need to see them order the rib. I don't even need to see them eat the ribs, Mike. When they make that choice, I know they haven't done hardly any research about meal interviews. One of the first things you learn is don't eat things with your fingers.
Oh, you want to see it though. Believe me, you want to see it. You're asking them a question and they're trying to get their answer out in between, you know,
smacking
their fingers
or they're gesturing at you quite vigorously with barbecue sauce all over their fingers and thumbs.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
So look, if you have to touch the food with your fingers, it's not a good idea to order it. Don't order lobster. Don't order shrimp cocktail, which also brings up the point, please, let's not have anything that you have to dip in a sauce, because that sauce gets on the thing, and then you bring that thing to your mouth, and the sauce ends up in your lap, and it drips all over you. No fried chicken, no french fries or pommes frites, particularly if you're going to dip them in ketchup.
If you have half a day of interviews ahead of you after lunch.
Yeah. You know, and generally when it comes to things like ketchup is not one of those things that, you know, if you have to pay more than $20 for your entree, ketchup generally doesn't go with it. We recognize here that we are not as internationally traveled as perhaps some of our listeners, even though we have traveled internationally. We don't know every food that might be served in every locale that is listening to this cast. We're thrilled to have our international listeners, and if you'd like to enlighten us, we'd be happy to broaden our repertoire a little bit. But the fundamental underlying rules apply about don't order food that you have to eat with your fingers. And I'll go a little bit further. This is something that you won't find. This is a recommendation you may not find anywhere else. I recommend not ordering salad. Believe it or not, Mike, I've seen more messes with salad than any other food. And I'll tell you what I think it is. I think a lot of people recommend don't order something heavy. And that's fine. Don't order a big steak. Okay, fine. And so people go the other extreme and say, well, I'll order something light. I'll order a salad. Quite frankly, I can't tell you how many chicken salads I've eaten at lunch in my life. You know, a salad with chicken breast on the top of it. I get my protein and I don't fill myself up. But the fact is, if you put some dressing on it, lettuce is very unruly.
You're right. And frankly, I avoid, for this very reason, I avoid salads at all costs. I stick to simple things like burgers and fried chicken and heavy steak. Very rare. You're right, because you never know when you're being interviewed. It's
good. You're just being cantankerous tonight, aren't you?
Yeah. This one just upsets me.
Your diet had better not be so mercenary that you can't eat something else. If you go to a meal and you say, "I'm sorry, I only eat salad," there are plenty of executives I know that would raise an eyebrow about that. So generally, stay away from salad. Every once in a while, you can have a normal meal. Now, I eat more salads than anybody else in the world. Anybody who's eaten lunch with me in the last 2 years knows that's what I order, chicken salad. But not if you're going to have a business luncheon and you want to impress a client or you want to impress an executive or there's going to be some business done. Also, no soup. Too dangerous.
Might fall asleep, drown. I understand.
Yeah. Now look, I'll go a step further here, and we're not known for being shy about our opinions. If you have unusual eating habits, I recommend you better be able to be brief about it. If you're a vegetarian and you get invited to go to a meal at a steakhouse, it's inappropriate if your host is taking you there for you to say, "I'm sorry, I'm a vegetarian." Because you can get something that respects your habits at a finer restaurant. Certainly, eat something that works for you. Please don't tell everybody your eating habits. It's not appropriate. Don't expect a group to bend to your needs. And as a general rule, if you have to make more than one change to something on the menu, you need to be ordering something else. I'm stunned. In fact, I call it the Starbucks effect. You know, this, I'd like a half calf, decaf, foam latte, no foam, no whip, mocha soy, just drives me nuts. So if you have to say, "I'd like the chicken breast, but will you please ask them to braise it in olive oil as opposed to what they normally use, take the skin off, bring the sauce on the side, no olives," you're too picky. And people are going to draw a conclusion about that.
Yeah, and then you have
to notice that unless we're best friends,
right? And then you have the additional embarrassment, perhaps, given how if it's terribly special, then the chances of it coming back from the kitchen wrong are fairly high. And now you have, now you have to decide whether you're going to eat something that's not the way you like it, or be in a position where you have to make a fuss then.
Obviously, yeah, in fact, if you've made a fuss to begin with, and I would argue that three or four changes on a menu item is a fuss, and then it comes incorrectly, either you're going to eat it because everybody else now has their food, or you're going to make another fuss by sending it back, at which point there's going to be an awkward moment when you tell everyone else, "Please go ahead and eat," and then you're asking them to violate a fundamental rule that nobody eats until everybody has food on their on the table. It is an accident waiting to happen.
Right. It goes without saying, the purpose of the meal is not to eat. You're not there to eat.
Well said. Meeting. Exactly right. You're not there to eat. I'll mention a couple of other things that I've noticed. We're not trying to cover the waterfront here. This is, again, we're not Emily Post. You never open your napkin with a flourish, and you never open it completely. You always leave it half folded. It goes in your lap until you get up, and then you put it on your chair, and when you come back to the table, you put it back in your lap. You don't put it on the table until the end of the meal when you're walking away. If for some reason you eat something that must then come out of your mouth for some reason, you take it out with whatever utensil or instrument, including your hand, you put it in there with. Don't spit something out into your hand that you put into your mouth with your fork. And so many people have asked me about this. What's this plate for? And so on. I'll just say this very briefly. You use your butter knife to get butter from a common source on the table. Then you put that butter on your bread plate, which is usually to your left. Then you only butter the piece of bread that's going to go into your mouth, and never have bread left in your hand after you put some in your mouth. In other words, if you tear your bread, everything that you tear off should go in your mouth. If that won't fit in your mouth, tear it again and only butter the part that you're going to put in your mouth. And as a general rule, if you have to ask for more bread before dinner, you're probably eating too much bread. You're supposed to pass to the left. Although if once things start getting passed around, if it's a family style meal, don't be too militant about it. But generally we pass to the left and accept to the right. And please, folks, know your waiter's name, and the waiter is not beneath you, because if you begin thinking that the wait person is beneath you and you treat them as such, and if you're rude or abrupt in any way, that comes across as arrogance in a business environment, which is not conducive to good business relationships.
I love that one because I always pay attention to – matter of fact, that's one of the things I'm looking for is how do they treat the servers? How do they treat the busboys? How do they – because invariably, the way they treat those people, that's the way they're going to treat their staff. And there's no room for rude or intolerant people.
And here's a subtle tip. I don't have this one in our show notes, Mike, but it's something I've noticed, and I'm probably being over picky, but I do notice it. If a waiter or waitress comes to the table or a bus person and asks a question, and a guest of mine or someone in my party doesn't look at them when they speak, in other words, just stares at the menu and asks questions of them, or raises their eyebrows but continues to look at them and then continues to look at the menu and doesn't look at them, they wouldn't do that with anyone else. I believe that's a power move. I believe that is a move that says, I don't need to talk to you because you're a server, and I don't. I find that inappropriate. I find it unprofessional or at least arrogant. I think if someone speaks to you, you should turn and face them. I don't think we need to be best friends with our waiter, but we should know his name. I'm not a particular fan of waiters who say, hi, my name is Chad, and I'll be taking care of you tonight. Well, no, Chad, you really won't be taking care of us. You'll be waiting on our table. But by the same token, I think it's inappropriate to have a conversation with someone or to ask questions somewhat imperiously while staring at the menu and acting as if the waiter is a talking computer that is programmed to answer your questions, as opposed to engaging them politely in a discussion.
There's so much here. I've never done this, but kind of like we're talking about it now. I'd almost think about, you know, asking the server to create a situation and see how one of my guests, let's assume I'm interviewing somebody, how they act under stress. You know, how server makes a mistake. How do they handle? Do they smile? Do they get surly?
Yes.
Could be interesting.
I agree with you. I've never thought of it either, but I wouldn't put it past me in the next 5 years when I'm interviewing somebody to do that very thing, to see how someone responds.
I'm taking
graciousness, notes. Kindness, respectfulness, gentleness in a tight situation is priceless. You can't buy it. You can't train it, in my opinion. And to find someone who immediately pipes up with rudeness or shortness or abruptness is in my opinion, a terrible red flag. I love working with smart people. I love working with people who are assertive and effective and goal-oriented and results-oriented and are willing to take no prisoners and work until 2 in the morning. And I will do anything for someone who is a gracious, kind team player who always offers to help, who always opens the door for anyone, male or female, doesn't matter, and it generally is deferential and stops talking when other people interrupt them and so on. That kind of team player attitude is so hard to find, and when you find it, if they have the other skills, hire them, and be careful because if I meet them, I may hire them away from you.
There you go. Okay, now the subject that everybody's waiting to hear about, how much do we get to drink at lunch? That's what I want to know.
You may drink as much water as you like, Mike.
Well, that's it for this week, and we'll finish this up on next week's show. In the meantime, if you have any comments, please feel free to leave them on our discussion forums at www.manager-tools.com/forums. It's also that time of the month, yep, it's Podcast Alley vote time. So if you haven't voted this month, please do stop by Podcast Alley and put your vote in for us there. Or simply just go to our website, and at the top left corner, you'll see an easy place to put your vote in. So folks, until next week, so long.